Welcome to the Toronto Railway Museum's Roundhouse Park Audio Guide. This audio guide will explain the history of many of the artifacts that you see outdoors in the park. When the museum is open, you can tour inside of the roundhouse. In addition to the equipment and displays, there is a train simulator that lets you drive around Toronto's rail lands as they looked in the 1950s. You can also visit the gift shop, which is in Don Station. The Don Station is also where you can board our miniature train. For the times the museum is open and for prices, please visit the museum website, torontorailwaymuseum.com. Please note some of the cars and locomotives described in this guide may have been moved inside the roundhouse on the day of your visit. Some of the buildings may also be closed. This is for restoration or maintenance. The audio guide narration will take about 30 to 45 minutes, but you are welcome to take as long as you like. Please check out the interpretive plaques located across Roundhouse Park for additional information and insights. Feel free to stop at any point, take photos and videos, and if exhibits are open to tour inside. Our very knowledgeable guides, known as docents, will be happy to show you around and answer your questions. But before we get going, here are a few important housekeeping notes. Remember, safety first, last, and always. Look around you before and during taking photographs and videos. Walk slowly and step over the rails. If you are going into the equipment, grasp the handrails firmly and watch your step. Watch and listen for our miniature train. If you have children, please keep an eye on them at all times. If you are standing on the turntable, please note that it operates on occasion, so look and listen first before approaching it. If you need to use a restroom, there is one inside the Steam Whistle Brewery. The Steam Whistle is one of our partners, and we invite you to try out its fine beverages and food. The Toronto Railway Museum is a not-for-profit and charitable organization that operates within the John Street Roundhouse and throughout Roundhouse Park. Our mission is to tell the story of Toronto's railways and how they have shaped, and continue to shape, our city, province, and our country. In fact, Toronto's railways have had an impact on transportation across North America. The John Street Roundhouse was built in 1929 by the Canadian Pacific Railway to house and repair its large fleet of passenger locomotives traveling through Union Station. It was last used in 1986. The CPR is a private railway company incorporated in 1881. Over a period of 6 years, it built a railway network spanning Canada from Montreal in the east to Vancouver in the west. The John Street Roundhouse was a very active industrial building. It was in use 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, until the end of the 1950s. This is when diesel locomotives fully replaced steam locomotives. The John Street Roundhouse was an eco-innovator for its time, due to its use of direct steaming technology. What this means is the roundhouse used steam from a nearby steam heating plant for buildings like the Royal York Hotel and Union Station to warm up its locomotives' boilers. This practice cut down on the burning of coal to a certain extent, and the harmful emissions that it releases. Just west of the John Street Roundhouse was the Spadina Roundhouse, built by Canadian National in 1927. It was demolished in 1986 to make way for the construction of the Rogers Centre and several condominium buildings. Some 200 years ago, the land around you did not exist, but the need for railways to access downtown Toronto prompted civil engineers to fill in the shoreline and create artificial land. They used landfill that was dredged up from the bottom of Lake Ontario. This is why Front Street is so named, because it was originally on the waterfront. The land you are standing on was actually created around 1927. An earlier John Street roundhouse was built near this spot in 1897, about 5.5 meters or 18 feet lower than the one you see now. The higher elevation of the new roundhouse was necessary to match the height of Union Station, which was completed around the same time. In 1990, the John Street Roundhouse was declared a National Historic Site. It is described as a, quote, architecturally and historically important surviving reminder of steam technology and the role of rail transportation in the city of Toronto. In front of the roundhouse is its turntable. Turntables were used to spin steam locomotives around to get them in or out of the roundhouse stalls. Our turntable holds the title of the largest in Canada, at 36.5 meters or 120 feet long. Prior to the opening of the Toronto Railway Museum, Western Mechanical fully restored the turntable to operating condition in 2007. Today we use the turntable to move our locomotives and rolling stock around the park as necessary. We use a small purple and gray industrial diesel switcher, number one, for that purpose, which you may or may not see today. It was built by the Canadian Locomotive Company in Kingston, Ontario, under license from Whitcomb, a subsidiary of the Baldwin Locomotive Works of the United States. At the Toronto Railway Museum, restorations of our historic equipment are always taking place. Our volunteer staff work throughout the year to preserve them. To continue our work, we welcome your donations. To donate online, please visit the TRHA website, and if you're interested in volunteering, please email us at volunteer@trha.ca, or you can ask in the museum or the gift shop if they are open. Number 7020 was constructed by the American Locomotive Company in partnership with General Electric in October 1944. Since World War II was ongoing at the time, it was designed with the crushing demands of wartime in mind. At the time, similar diesel-electric switchers were beginning to replace earlier steam locomotives that were built for the same purpose. While switchers like this one were smaller and less powerful than their mainline counterparts, they were incredibly efficient at the tasks they were designed for. When 7020 was delivered to Canadian Pacific, Toronto had a number of smaller railway yards scattered around downtown. It was very common for diesel switchers to pull freight transfers between each of these yards multiple times a day, to the point that 7020 was often a regular fixture of downtown Toronto from the time it was delivered right up until retirement during the 1980s. It thus forms an integral part of the story of dieselization, of Canadian railways at war, and of Toronto's railway story. It was donated by Canadian Pacific to the City of Toronto in 1986, some 20 or so years prior to the formation of the Toronto Railway Museum, with the hopes that at some point in the future, a museum would be built here. In 2014, our volunteers successfully fired up its engine, and in 2019, they repainted the locomotive to what it would have been wearing when it was first delivered to Canadian Pacific. Despite being built in 1906 and looking like a miniature steam engine, our Porter locomotive is quite the green machine. It operates entirely on compressed air rather than steam due to the nature of the factory it was owned by. It spent its career at the Plymouth Cordage Company in Welland, Ontario, who had materials that were highly flammable within the plant. As a result, a traditional steam locomotive with a boiler would have been a major risk. The Porter was generously donated by Andrew Merrilies Limited and was cosmetically restored by our volunteers. It sits on its own piece of track because it is a narrow-gauge locomotive, which means it's designed for rails that are narrower than the ones we have around the park, which are standard gauge. Before you is the crown jewel of Roundhouse Park, Canadian National Steam Locomotive number 6213. First, it's important to go over some fundamentals. Steam locomotives were, and still are, often classified by their wheel arrangement. This is known as the white notation. 6213 has two small leading wheels on each side for a total of four. Behind that are another four large drive wheels for a total of eight. There's another four trailing wheels in total towards the cab. Using the white notation, we describe this engine as a 484. Canadian National gave this type the moniker of Confederation, though it didn't catch on and the more widely accepted Northern moniker was adopted instead. 6213 was one of 155 Northern types owned by Canadian National. Built in 1942, it was one of the last steam locomotives ever built for CN. While the Northern types were most commonly found in passenger service, they would sometimes find themselves in charge of high-priority freight trains during wartime. 6213 was a regular in the Toronto area, and more broadly in southern Ontario, pulling inner-city passenger trains. It was retired from active duty in 1959, sitting in a scrap line for several months before it was saved. After some refurbishment, CN presented 6213 to the City of Toronto in 1960, at which point it was moved to the exhibition grounds near the old Stanley Barracks. It sat there until it was moved to its current location in Roundhouse Park in 2008. 6213 is a fine example of the last steam locomotives used in passenger service in the Toronto area. If you live in or visit Toronto, chances are you've either seen or rode the GO train before. Depending on where you stand in the park, you can sometimes see them depart or arrive at Union Station. You'll notice they often have one or more locomotives on the front, while on the back is a passenger car with its own cab. Since GO Transit was formed in 1967, it has exclusively run push-pull trains and commuter service across the Greater Toronto Area. Since GO Trains spend half of their time in reverse, it makes sense for the crew to be positioned at the back of the train during that time to maximize visibility and, by extension, safety. GO Transit's first passenger cars were these omni-level cars with fluted stainless steel, built by Hawker Siddeley in 1967. This one was given a cab, along with several others, as they were meant to be positioned at the back of the train. As these omni-level cars were slowly replaced with the new bi-level cars in service today, some were scrapped while others, including 104, were sold off to other commuter railroads. Specifically, 104 ended up in Montreal commuter service in 1994. It remained there until 2010 when it was once again sold to another railway carrier, this time in the Gaspé Peninsula region of eastern Quebec. To celebrate their 50th anniversary, GO Transit purchased Cab Car 104 back in 2017, refurbished it to its original appearance, and delivered it to the Toronto Railway Museum to be used as a permanent display piece. Canadian National 4803 is an example of early mainline diesel power that supplanted steam locomotives in Canada during the 1950s. Known as a GP7, it was built by General Motors Diesel in August 1953 as part of an order of 24 identical units. The GP stands for General Purpose, and these units were used in just about everything from switching to running mainline freight trains. While early diesels like these were more expensive than steam locomotives to manufacture at the time, they were cheaper to run for a number of reasons. Several diesels could work in tandem on the head end of a train with a crew and only the lead engine, whereas with steam locomotives, each one would need a crew. They also didn't require coal or the same degree of regular maintenance, as the nature of steam engines often led to them needing repairs more often. Few steam locomotives could be as versatile as general-purpose diesels. The successor to the GP7, the GP9, was significantly more popular at a total of 349 units delivered to CN. In both models, the forward direction was furthest from the cab. This is known as running long hood forward, which was common on early road switchers and general-purpose units. As new mainline diesels were developed in the 1960s and 70s, the GP7s were relegated to yard switching. In 1984, 4803 was donated to the City of Toronto with the hopes that a railway museum would be created in the future. Prior to delivery, CN repainted it to its original green and gold paint scheme. It is mechanically complete except for the traction motors. It's one of our most popular attractions in Roundhouse Park, especially when we are conducting cab tours. Toronto, Hamilton, and Buffalo Railway Caboose No. 70 is a great example of cabooses used by Canadian railways during the first half of the 20th century. It was built by American Car and Foundry in Berwick, Pennsylvania in 1913, originally with a wooden exterior, but later given steel sheathing. Cabooses like No. 70, and our CN caboose, were once on the back of every freight train so that two or three crewmen could observe the train to ensure there were no issues, such as damage, load shifting, or fire. Additionally, cabooses function as an office for the conductor. Inside this caboose, you will find three bunks, one for each crew member, a potbelly stove, and desks for paperwork. Should additional brakes be applied, there are two brake wheels at either end of the caboose, or van as they were more commonly referred here in Canada. The upper section at one end of the caboose was known as a cupola, and it made it easier for the crew to observe the train while in motion. Cabooses were phased out on mainline trains through the 1980s and 90s, replaced by a flashing rear-end device which could inform the crew and the locomotive of any problems with the train. Some cabooses still find use today as switching platforms to allow a crewman to stand at the rear of the train while reversing in a yard. Number 70 was generously donated by the Toronto and York Division of the Canadian Railroad Historical Association and was subsequently restored to its mid-1950s appearance by our team of volunteers. CN Caboose No. 79144 has a rather interesting origin story. It started life as a wooden boxcar, built by the Eastern Car Company in 1920. Wooden boxcars were discontinued in favor of old steel boxcars later that same decade, and by the 1950s, wooden boxcars were being phased out. One of these was rebuilt into this caboose in December 1957. It still sits on its original trucks from when it was built as a boxcar. After retirement, It ended up at Pickett's Nurseries and Garden Supplies, where it was used as an office and living quarters. A developer acquired Pickett's Nurseries and donated the caboose to the museum in 2014. On its arrival, a team of volunteers began restoring the caboose inside and out. As we already have our Toronto Hamilton and Buffalo caboose on display for the public, we are currently using this caboose as an extension of our museum's operational space. Cape Race is a luxury solarium passenger car built in 1929 for Canadian Pacific by National Steel Car in Hamilton. It was part of a series of 15 named passenger cars, initially in the River series. Cape Race was first named River Liard after a river in Western Canada. The series featured ladies and gentlemen's showers, leather upholstered smoking rooms, a ladies' lounge, observation parlor, and a small buffet for snacks and beverages. Solarium cars like this were essentially the same as earlier parlor cars, except instead of an open observation platform at the back, it had extra tall windows to give passengers the same view while remaining completely enclosed. They were designed specifically for the Trans-Canada Limited, a seasonal cross-country passenger train introduced later that year, offering an all-steel consist, which was notable as wooden passenger cars had been the norm in previous decades. The Trans-Canada Limited was short-lived due to the Great Depression, operating only until 1930. River Liard was brought back into service in 1941 due to increased ridership during the war, after receiving some renovations and being renamed to Cape Race. It's named after a place in Newfoundland where a transmission station first received distress calls from the sinking Titanic. Following its return to service, Cape Race was used on express trains between Montreal and Toronto, and even the Dominion, which at the time was Canadian Pacific's flagship transcontinental train. In 1963, Cape Race was converted into a business car and used by the CP superintendent based in Kenora, Ontario. By the end of the decade in 1969, it was sold to the Upper Canada Railway Society, who used it on their famed rail excursions out of Toronto, until it became too expensive to maintain and was retired in the 1970s. It ended up in the John Street Roundhouse after being donated to the City of Toronto, where it remained until the formation of the Toronto Railway Museum on the site. Near the northeast corner of Roundhouse Park, you'll find a two-story building labeled Cabin D and an adjoining tool shed. It's an interlocking tower, one of several that were built along the Union Station corridor labeled A through D. Cabin D was originally located west of the Bathurst Street Bridge, between what is now GO Transit's Lakeshore West Line and the Kitchener Line, alongside the tool shed, which was built around the same time using parts that dated back to the 1850s. Interlocking towers were often elevated like this one to give operators a clear view of the tracks. They were used to control the switches and signals surrounding them in a time without computers when this had to be done manually. Operators often had at their disposal a telegraph, a timetable, and a clock set as accurately as possible in order to determine when and how to set the levers. During the mid-1920s, when big changes were being made to the Union Station corridor, cabins A through C were demolished and replaced by brick interlocking towers. You may have seen some of them if you've ever arrived at Union Station by train. The Cherry Street Tower, Scott Street Tower, and the John Street Tower all still exist along the rail corridor. Cabin D was left in place as changes to that end of the rail corridor didn't happen to the same degree as on the opposite side of Union Station, specifically grade separation and realignment. Interlocking towers have slowly been phased out in North America since the mid-20th century, and while some still function today, that number is dwindling. Cabin D and its tool shed were moved to the John Street Roundhouse in 1984 with the hopes that a museum would one day open here. The structure deteriorated significantly over time, but was thankfully restored by our team of volunteers. If it's open on the day of your visit, you'll find the interlocking system within has been restored and functions nearly the same as it would have before it was moved. Despite what the excellent restoration job by our volunteers would suggest, Don Station is indeed the real deal. The station was originally located on the west side of the Don River, just south of the Queen Street Bridge, and was built in 1896, making it the oldest surviving train station in Toronto. After its closure to passengers in 1967, Don Station was moved to the Todd Morton Mills Heritage Site in the Don Valley. After the formation of the Toronto Railway Historical Association, it was moved to Roundhouse Park and restored by our team of volunteers in time for the museum's opening in 2010. The interior now houses our gift shop and the ticket office for our miniature train. On the roof next to the turret, you'll notice a pair of semaphore blades. These were known as order boards and were used in an antiquated form of communication on railways before the wider adoption of two-way radio and centralized traffic control. The station agent would operate these semaphores to inform an approaching train whether they had to pick up orders, usually some info that wasn't on the timetable, such as a delay. When the semaphores were facing up as they are now, it meant that there were no orders to pick up at this station. Each semaphore blade was directed at trains traveling in opposite directions, hence only one side of the semaphore blades are painted. This concludes our outdoor audio guide. We hope you found the guide fun and informative, and we welcome your feedback. Please click the stars at the top of the app screen to provide your comments, and thank you very much for joining us in helping support the preservation of Toronto's railway heritage. Our Jackman passenger car is a 14-section sleeping car, built by Canadian Car and Foundry in 1931. It's an example of standard overnight accommodations that could be found on trains in Canada prior to the 1960s. Accommodations consisted of 14 upper and lower bunks, 7 on each side of the car. During the day, the lower bunks could be folded into a pair of coach seats. At each end of the car, there was a large washroom, one for men with a smoking lounge, and one for women without a smoking lounge, but with additional sinks, mirrors, and other amenities. Steel cars like these were known as heavyweights, not just for their steel construction, but also because they were ballasted with concrete to make them heavier. This was in an attempt to offer a smoother ride over the jointed rail used at the time. Such cars were widely used by families, commercial travelers, by troops during wartime, and immigrants. Beds were prepared, curtains arranged, and ladders provided by sleeping car porters, a profession traditionally reserved for Black Canadians. Unfortunately, Black porters were often treated poorly by passengers and their supervisors. They were often derogatorily referred to as George, the name of a famous railway magnate whose company made and operated sleeping cars. Their employment afforded them a stable income, a benefit most Black Canadians were not afforded in the early 20th century. This gave Black porters a platform for political prominence and the ability to become leaders in their communities. In 1946, Black Canadian porters were organized by an American union called the Brotherhood of Sleeping Car Porters as a Canadian chapter. It became the first trade union in Canada organized by and for Black Canadians, pioneering the civil rights movement in Canada in the process. In the late 1960s or early 70s, this car, along with several others like it from the first half of the century, were put into maintenance of way service. Maintenance of way crews who worked to maintain the track across Canadian Pacific System would live out of this car when going to work on sections of track in rural areas that are inaccessible except by rail, such as parts of Northern Ontario. It ended up in the collection of the Upper Canada Railway Society, who generously donated it to the City of Toronto. We plan to restore this car and make it a keynote on a future display of the history of immigration, railways, and of the development of Toronto.